It's the Game of Roses. Welcome to the Game of Roses. This is the Game of Roses. Welcome to the Game of Roses.
I don't know if I can safely say, like, oh, I'm all in. I'm trying to process the emotions and resonate with what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, like, I have pulled those feelings aside as well and everything that's happened.
Listen, you don't need to open the door. You just unlock the door. Like, just unlock it.
You don't need to open the door. You just need to unlock it.
Because once it's unlocked, I can pry it open.
Blake is consistently using metaphors of jamming open doors to talk about getting women who find him repulsive and fuckboyish to give him a chance. He tells them to pry it open.
He views women as closed doors. Some locked, some cracked a little bit, just enough for him to pry them open. Let me in your door.
It's just a little wholesome door jam. Just trying to get a foot in the door.
Welcome to another week of
Game
of Roses.
Damn it.
I am your co-host, Bachelor Clues, with me as always.
Co-host, Lizzie Pace.
And we're here to break down one more week of the game for you. All the top players, all the top plays, some of the big errors, some of the surprises, and some of the new players who joined us this week.
Hopefully we're going to pry open some of the best strategies that came out of the game this week. We're coming off of wedding week. Spirits are high. Angela comes in.
And the first thing we see is the producers undermining the very conceit of the show that this is about helping people find love. It's the first thing we see this week. A woman that they have sent into the game specifically and only really to sabotage Clay and Nicole's relationship. Once again, if this show was truly about finding love, the producers would literally never do this.
They're choosing from, you know, all the people that they have on standby to come on the show. Angela's only thing they've talked about is that she's dated Clay. We learn one more fact about her this episode, which is that she wants to be a mom. And Clay shits on her for it.
Clay seems like he wants a, as he said, somebody to push him, somebody who has ambition, goals, these types of things.
Someone he can lift on his back.
Nicole, at this point, says something very interesting to Clay. She says verbatim, "Get your head in the game. She's weak," regarding Angela, of course. So she very much sees this as a game, as does Clay. He's made multiple sports references at all times, really, in almost every episode.
I mean, if that's been your literal entire life, I can't see you not seeing everything you do like that.
There are clearly players who are in the game, at least more overtly for the competitive aspects of it. And then there are players who really do cling to the idea of finding love and all that, and the gameplay is kind of secondary to them. I think Clay is somebody who's kind of right on the line. I think he is looking for a relationship, but his competitive nature and his understanding of just game theory generally kind of balances it out.
Then we get this false narrative about Angela.
Yeah. All of the other players are like, why is she here? Why would she want to be put in this situation? The answer is simple. It's the same reason all of you are there for Instagram followers. She was a night one girl in her season of The Bachelor. She met Clay through a Bachelor casting thing. They begin dating. And now she has one shot to get on Bachelor in Paradise, and it's to play the ex-girlfriend of Clay card. And she knew while she was in holding, the longer Clay made it into the game, probably the more likely she would be to come on, because she would be the torpedo that they fire at his relationship. So she was probably happy to hear that he found somebody and was dating them and like, oh, this is good.
Oh, yeah. That's her, like, hook she can use to get back on the show. John Paul Jones talks with Big Mike. Okay, this was my error of this episode. John Paul Jones not talking to Haley about Tayshia earlier. John Paul Jones has been melting down, and Big Mike's like, when are you going to talk to Haley? Which is him being a shoulder to cry on and another argument for why he should be Bachelor. He's 4TRR. Treat women with respect. John Paul Jones is like, I have instinct. He's lost his words.
It's poor play for me, it was not the error of the game. I think John Paul Jones is under extreme emotional duress at this point. He is the player that the producers have singled out to shove into nervous breakdowns whenever they can. And we see a little bit of another one later. I don't think he knows what he's saying. I certainly don't think his head is enough in the game to be playing it correctly. And while it was a misstep, certainly, I think he's done worse, honestly. He did worse in these episodes, in fact. I think there was even a worse play still.
I agree with you that John Paul Jones is like way out of it, has a screw loose or whatever. As Tayshia, the woman who's interested in him, says that there's something wrong with him. Then Derek tells Haley about Tayshia. Then Haley brings it up with John Paul Jones and he has to dump her. This is her third paradise, probably her last.
This was her last chance to make some kind of meaningful relationship within the player pool. Unless she can wind up at another wedding or something, or like, I just can't see her ever being in one of the main three pieces of the game again. Bachelor in Paradise is the one she really has a shot at, and I think even that's stretching it. Next season, yeah, Bachelor in Paradise, I think she's done.
She was brought in mid-season. She's
yeah. We are watching her final season right now.
When you start being brought in later and later in the season, it's a bad sign.
So yeah, then we see John Paul Jones gets grilled by Haley. There is an interesting bit of play here. It wasn't my play of the game, but it was a very strong play from Demi. She's sitting immediately behind John Paul Jones with Christian. They're drinking, whatever. They happen to overhear this conversation. And Demi starts pantomiming behind John Paul Jones. She starts making crazy faces. And there is a literal moment where the camera zooms from the main action of John Paul Jones and Haley's conversation to Demi's fucking face. She makes their fight about her at least enough to get a shot in the show, and then they cut from that shot to her confessional about it. She manufactures a piece of screen time out of something she has no involvement in whatsoever. It was a fantastic play.
If you can get the camera to pan away from a breakup to your face, you're doing the right thing. Demi has also done a bunch of impressions of people throughout this paradise, and that is guaranteed screen time. If you do a parody of everyone, they're going to use one of them as the parody of whoever they're trying to make into the fool.
Then Haley is sobbing to, who of all people, Blake. He's there, a shoulder to cry on. We know he's tried the strategy before and it's worked out well for him. This time it goes a little sideways. Haley asks him, why do men think they can do this to women? Manipulate them for fun. And she's asking Blake, maybe the worst guy on the beach to ask. And he just is kind of rolling his eyes. He doesn't give her a straight answer. He even doesn't know how to answer it. She's
Why do men love to just twirl women around until they can't see straight and they're in love? Blake,
Yeah, he's like, I don't know. I've heard of things like that happening, I guess.
Fuck boys, am I right? Then we have a big fight between Derek and John Paul Jones.
This was one half of my error of the game.
What? We're doing half errors?
Yeah, you know, sometimes like you could make two errors on a single play or something.
Mine was a half
error,
too.
What?
I'm going to come up with my other half.
My errors are strung together. They're causal.
All right.
So this is the first half of this error, is that Derek actually engages the fight. Thank you very much, Your Honor. I like how now we're even developing rules for our own arguments about the fucking rules of this. Jesus Christ. We're developing a show within a show that now has its own fucking rules.
What is your half error?
My half error is Derek did not have to get in this argument with John Paul Jones. He certainly didn't have to escalate it as he did. But that's just giving the producers footage of you being a dickhead to use. You never want to give them that footage, ever.
They will use all fight footage, basically.
He didn't have to engage in it, and he did, and he stood there, and he was the one who looked bad coming out of it.
I mean, it didn't make either of them look great, but it's also bad to get in a fight when it's offense week. The girls have the roses.
Or the power, as they said at one point.
They just have two roses that are just Christian and Demi now? Is that what's happening?
As Lord Harrison laid out the rules, Demi is the man in the relationship. Christian is the woman. She gets the rose in the week of the women to give to Demi, and Demi gets it in the week of the men to give to Christian. You'll accept it. That is what Dark Lord Harrison has decreed. So then we have
Old Matt Donald, we got a new Nog. He comes in. Oh, at Patrick Lewis, they're throwing in rookies and giving them play time.
That's essentially what it is at this late stage in the game. We're 1 or 2 weeks away from Lord Harrison coming in and laying his decree that you must fuck, essentially, to stay in paradise. That will happen very soon. If you're not in a relationship, if they haven't been able to build a narrative around you, you're not going to get to fuck, because in paradise, there is no frivolous fucking. It has to be for the right reasons, and they have complete control of that.
Let's talk about the fuck room.
You mean the boom boom room?
The boom boom room. They just started calling it this.
But this thing happens when Old Matt Donald comes in, where all of the women have these confessional clips saying that he's sexy, which no woman actually believes. But it's something that the producers are forcing them to say, I feel like.
Or maybe he like looks really good in person. I don't know. That's them paradise goggles. You've been there for weeks and you're just hoping something walks on the beach that you can make out with. Like, oh, yeah, sexy old Matt Donald.
Then after Matt Donald, Luke enters and the Great One is invoked. Nick Viall. He's mentioned by name twice. He looks like Nick Viall, Christina says. And then Haley says he's the poor man's Nick Viall. She knows who the real Viall is. This fucking pretender may have a beard like Viall. He may have brown curls like Viall, but he is not Viall. He is the worst version of Viall.
I mean, they were both on Viall's season. They want him. They look at him as a golden god.
He was the fucking bachelor.
Poor man's Nick Viall is the Nick Viall that just goes to paradise and is never the bachelor. It's just one thing about Matt Donald. The paradise goggles, they cause you to see all that sweat as just like glistening like a god instead of the wet, slimy baby that we see on our TV screens.
I mean, Matt Donald really is having problems when he comes into paradise with the sweat, but you know. It's just one more element psychologically, I think, for players to deal with that makes this entire ordeal completely insane.
Do you remember there was another famous Paradise sweater, Josh Murray?
Oh, yeah. He liked his pizza. Everything. And he sweated it all out.
Okay, so then we have poor man's Nick Viall and old Matt Donald and Christina and Sydney go on a double date.
Nothing really happens here. There's no strong play whatsoever.
Blake calls it the boom boom room, which I think this is the first time we've heard it called the boom boom room. And it's because Dylan and Hannah are going to bang for all day for Dylan's birthday.
Yeah, it's interesting that they call it the boom boom room. I mean, certainly people who comment on the game come up with their own words, nomenclature to describe certain rules, certain regulations, certain things that repeat within the game.
It is called the fuck room.
We were calling it the fuck room. You know, they're calling it the boom boom room. More interesting to me, though, is that the producers choose to air it. So the producers are okay with that being what it's called, the boom boom room. They're okay with us knowing that place is just for them to go fuck, but they've given it a cute little cartoon name. And I'm very curious about where that came from. Was it the players who manufactured it, or was it a producer who called it that? Did they insert the term into the game?
I would bet 80% likely it's producer.
I think so as well.
A boom boom room is a really cutesy way of wrapping up a sexual assault scandal, which is essentially what it is. They had to make the boom boom room because of the Corinne DiMario thing.
That's the show we're watching. Oh, sexual assault allegation that destroyed two people's lives for a year, year and a half. Well, now we got the boom boom room. Hi, producers, excuse me. Can we have the keys to the boom boom room? It's Dylan's birthday. I mean, that had to happen. That conversation happened.
She sounded probably just like that. That is how Hannah talks.
That's my best just kind of female voice impersonation. Like, I can't really do a good one.
They just kind of whisper at each other's faces. Oh, we'll go on walks, darling.
Sounded nice to me. Move to Cali, go on walks.
Old Matt doesn't kiss Sydney on their date because he's afraid of what his mom will think.
And they make a pretty big deal out of it. But then later, it seemed like he was making out with Bree just fine. So I'm wondering how much of that was...
He had to walk with Sydney to run with Bree.
And this brings, at least in my mind, something else into question. he has a bit, a recurring bit in the show that his voice cracks. In almost every one of his scenes, it happens at least once. It seems to me like the producers might have had a scripted persona for him to some degree.
Conspiracy. His voice isn't cracking. We have a package of fireworks and like earth images that we want to show. So we need you to. But I mean, you think he's like, oh yeah, I'll say I'm notorious or be a little scaredy cat.
Yes. I think they say anything they want. I think the producers fully control them.
I mean, Lord Harrison roasted him immediately when his voice cracked and had like a pretty good line. He was just like, oh yeah, my son went through that around your age, and then you start growing chest hair. And
yeah, that was improv? No fucking way. That shit was scripted.
All right, where were we?
Then
John Paul Jones talks to Tayshia.
First, oh my God. Luke on his double date with
You're
Christina.
You're just obsessed with Luke because you think
he's compared to Nick Viall again. And in this moment, we see on screen a fucking split screen image of Luke next to who? Nick Viall. Nick Viall made it into the fucking show. His image made it into the game. If there, who else is doing that?
His lisping speaking voice made it into the show.
No other player's doing that. That's what I'm saying. Inadvertently, he's even appearing in the show. He truly, in my mind, is the greatest of all time. There's no one close. There's no one close. He was the fucking Bachelor. He made it to the end of two Bachelorettes. He appeared on fucking Bachelor in Paradise and just did it again in an old video clip.
I mean, I'm sure they've showed clips of other people before. You know, like a flashback to something.
They are telling he's the next Nick Viall. That he looks enough like him. You look like this player. You're like the poor man's version of this fucking god of our game.
You think they're going to start giving him Nick Viall-esque storylines?
No, he can't pull it off.
No.
He's not Nick Viall. Sorry. There's only one.
So then, John Paul Jones talks to Tayshia. He breaks down and he snots on the beach.
Well, this is it. This is like one of his major breakdowns. And granted, he's drunk and he's hot and he's tired. And as we've heard many times in this season, he's emotionally drained. And the producers just keep pushing him in these situations that are harder and harder for him to deal with. Until he has nervous breakdowns again and again and again and again.
They've destroyed him.
He's broken.
Then Tayshia breaks up with Derek, says you're a great guy, but can't see it. This was my MVP. Tayshia breaks up with Derek in a very kind way. She's able to do it very tactfully where she doesn't look like a bad person, even though she's basically kicking the puppy dog that was already down. And then Derek takes himself out of the game after a good... Oh, and then this is where my other half error comes in. Derek takes himself out of the game after a...
That's my half error too.
Well, fuck you.
But your two half errors don't... They're not connected. One was another person.
This is
now
my
I'm the one who's hammering home the rules.
Error, regardless of anything Batcher Coos thinks, Derek takes himself out of the game and he makes a pretty good bachelor speech about how he's unlovable. Leaves with 443K. Respectable. But you never take yourself out of the game. Never.
Not never. There are some circumstances in which it's beneficial. This was not one of them.
What is a circumstance where it's beneficial?
It really depends contextually on what's going on in your season. Who's still left? Is there a villain that's coming for you? Is there some landmine that the producers have set that you cannot avoid without ejecting? It's essentially to save yourself. In this case, he was fine. There were no landmines. He could have had, you know, the next couple of days completely open. He could have been on a date with Bree instead of old Matt Donald. He blew it there. That, for me, was the second half of his error that he set up in the John Paul Jones fight.
I think all screen time is good screen time.
Ask Jed about that.
I'm sure Jed is selling out concerts, probably.
No, I just read an article. He's back to stripping.
What? He's a stripper?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Google it.
Wow.
This is our Game of Roses News Minute. Jed Wyatt, back on the stripper pole after his brief stint in Bachelorette, in which he was the villain and ruined his life entirely. Do you have any details for us?
At Pace Case here, Jed Wyatt worked as a stripper for 8 months before going on The Bachelorette at Nashville's Music City Mail Review. His main job was singing. He would sometimes sing shirtless. It was a good addition to our show.
I think there are times when you can leave the game and appear to be above it. Charlene Joint did that.
Yeah. Charlene's one of the greats in my mind.
But this was not one. True. This was Derek's right. Final error. He went out of the game on an error. Then we have the second episode.
Do you think he was hoping that if he took himself out, he'd be next Bachelor?
I think yes. In the back of his mind, he was viewing it as that because it does set you apart from the game. It's saying that there are certain things you can do that kind of defy the game itself. And in that defiance, you're sending the message that your motivations are purer than the game. It can't be about getting a rose or a ring in the end or a crown or whatever. I'm willing to leave the game for my convictions. And he's trying to do that.
Going out on his own terms. That's what she called it.
And he's trying to do that here. It fails. But yeah, he made an okay speech for Bachelor. I just don't think he's got it in him. He got a big Instagram bump from his appearance in Paradise and a free plug for his podcast. Can't ask for much more.
Oh, I bet they got so many podcast listeners.
Yeah, he was a good, I would
Derek,
say,
we'll
you know,
come on your podcast. Ask us.
I won't. I'm with JPJ on this. But he played a good season, I think. He had a good season overall. Wasn't like an all-star necessarily, but right under the cut. He just barely didn't make it. He was just a strong kind of utility player who did everything that he could while he was there.
He was pretty good. There was a lot of calls on Twitter for him to be next Bachelor. So I think it was pretty strong with some people. And I think he'll probably get laid a lot. So then we have my Jorge Moreno bystander of the week. Jorge Moreno makes a quick appearance in the tag, introducing the Mexican Tears Generator game during the double date where he just made people eat chilies.
My Jorge Moreno bystander of the week was the bartender who gave them the spicy margaritas that made old MacDonald sweat profusely. And as he put it, have things coming out of every orifice of his body.
Then we have part two. This is where Demi says Derek went out on his own terms. We lost a paradisian. One of my favorite Blake quotes here. I feel like I've, in air quotes, burned bridges with every other woman here, you know? Burning bridges is what he calls intercourse at Stagecoach. Pry that bridge open. Then
Chris asks Katie to take their relationship to the next level. I think that's the fuck room, but or boom boom room. He's priming her for the next phase of the game where they'll have to make a formal commitment to Lord Harrison that they will fuck in Paradise with an attitude toward commitment.
I mean, Lord Harrison has already started laying in like, oh, it's about to end. If you're not in a serious relationship, get out, which just means nothing because they're still bringing in new people. They brought in Australian Brie after he said that. If you're not in a serious relationship, get out. Like
Nothing. I mean, at this point, you must be aware that nothing Lord Harrison says is ever true. He is the father of lies. So when he comes out and he says, as you all know, this is all about love. That's all we care about here. We know immediately it's untrue because we've witnessed the first frames of this week were the producers directly undermining a relationship that is finding love. When he says any of this shit, it is just lies. It's to keep up the conceit that this show is about helping people. When
praise
in fact,
be Lord Harrison, father of lies.
Of course, praise him. Without this, nothing would exist without him. He alone commands paradise and makes it possible. But it is a lie. We must know that.
Oh. John Paul Jones grabs a fish out of the water at Bachelor Clues. She seems like a competent adult who has their shit together. He seems like an insane little kid.
He does. I mean, the way it was cut, look, we don't know what actually happened after their conversation where she kind of laid down the law with him and she was like, don't question me, I know what I'm doing. Almost immediately after it, he sprints into the sea and pulls a fish out of the fucking waves with his bare hands. This is an act of lunacy, if indeed no time passed. But it's possible, as you said earlier tonight, they had a few shots, got drunk, and he ran out in between the time period. But yeah, even drunk, I mean, that's crazy. He plucked a fish from the ocean with his hands.
I could see my boyfriend doing that. Tayshia, there's something wrong with him, and I kind of like it. See, she's got those paradise goggles on, I'm telling you. She's fucking dehydrated, sand in your eyes.
Chase enters.
Lord Harrison, why have you not found love? Oh, because I'm a fucking asshole.
I don't remember Chase.
He's BFFs with Tommy Lahren.
Oh, MAGA. Does he have a bunch of tweets and shit that are like liking Trump and...
Oh, he dated Tommy Lahren.
He's in deep.
Chase campaigned with her for Trump to be the next president.
So he's MAGA for sure.
Caption the pic, let's make America great together, hashtag squad, hashtag MAGA. Yeah, Chase sucks. Now we have something interesting happening, which is that the wedding was kind of like a tryout or feeder event for Bachelor in Paradise.
Chase is sent in with a singular mission, which is to target Angela and go directly for her. And this is because that relationship was set up at this wedding. And I think that wedding, that event, which is something I don't think they've done on Paradise yet, is kind of like a second half of the season. It allows the players that they have in holding, who they have not yet put in the game, to establish relationships that can be used in narratives by the producers. So if you're sitting in a hotel as a player and you haven't been called to Paradise yet, and you get sent to this thing, oh, we're going to have a wedding, we're going to have whatever the big event is, where they're going to have you mix with the people who are on the show, you have to develop some kind of relationship with someone on the show. Because there are probably a dozen such players, and maybe three or four are going to get called up in the late end of the season.
They've had weddings on Paradise before, but they've never like generated plot lines out of it before. So then Angela goes on a date with Chase. Nicole and Tayshia make fun of Angela's walk down the aisle. Mike talks to Clay about Angela.
And Clay says this. I found this very interesting. He says, is the best way to find love being with your ex every day? The answer, Clay, is no. And that's more evidence of the fact that this show does not care about helping anyone find love. In fact, they only seek to undermine it.
Right. Clay is like, I didn't sign up for this. And it's like, this is exactly what you signed up for. Yeah, you
literally did. Literally, you signed a piece of paper allowing them to do all of this to you.
You met your ex-girlfriend who was on Bachelor in Paradise, who clearly has communicated to you that she might go on. She's at the wedding. What do you think is going to happen? Now we have my play of the game. Blake, maybe what I wanted was right in front of me this whole time. I can't stop thinking about you and it's driving me crazy. Christina, this is weird. Blake makes a strong move. Blake is a leaf about to be blown off. He's seen that Derek has left. He's seen that everyone's like, well, it's his time. He doesn't really have a relationship. And Blake's just like been pitter-pattering around the beach, making weird faces, doing weird dances. He needs a redemption story. And you know what his redemption story can be? An Instagram relationship with a woman who like at least has some amount of fans in Bachelor Nation. It instantly is like a certification on him. Like, oh, he's not bad. He's not like predatory in how he deals with women. Look, he's like with Christina and she's a regular on Bachelor franchise. Was beloved until this season, I'm pretty sure. I think people have turned against her a little bit, but I think it's a strong move and the only one Blake can do if he wants to get to the end of Paradise.
Valid argument. It was not my play of the game. I agree it was a strong play. It was ultimately his only play. But he executed it fairly well. Was his performance believable? I didn't think so. But he said all the right words. He just didn't seem to mean any of them.
His performance was believable enough for someone that's like clearly into him. Christina's clearly into him.
Interesting. I think hers is a performance as well.
Interesting.
I don't think any of that relationship is real. I think it was premeditated at Stagecoach or even before. That if they go on the show and neither one of them found anybody, they would conjure up something like this so that it would seem real. I think they're both thinking there's a possible Jared and Ashley life for them out of this, where they do get married, they do get on magazine covers, they become Paradise royalty.
Do you think this is kind of like a pact that two friends make where they're like, oh, if both of us are single when we're 40, we'll get married.
Yes.
They're like, oh, if both of us are single at week 5 of Paradise, we're going to get married.
Yeah, we'll get Instagram married.
I mean, why not? Then the fucking craziest shit happens. Everyone encourages old Matt to kiss Sydney. He's sweating balls. And then he finally does it. And they show a montage of animals and the earth and rockets taking off. That lasts like a long time.
The show will do this type of stuff from time to time. A visual montage that celebrates sexual awakening, forward progress being made in a relationship that is of sexual nature. They did it with Raven when Nick Viall supposedly gave her first orgasm. That to me is kind of their crowning achievement in the holy shit, they just fucked or they're about to fuck montages.
I thought you were going to say cinematography.
No.
They do show, yeah, they'll show a firework going off or a fountain or a couple, but not to this extent.
Go back and watch that one they did for Raven after she lost her or got an orgasm from Nick Viall. He was the first man to give her an orgasm. Can I just say that?
Supposedly.
Within the narrative of the game, the game wrote that for him? Even better. If the game said, this is what we're going to show you as Nick Viall.
This was her virginity that she hadn't come. And what a great storyline if they can get The Bachelor to make her come.
But they did a whole piece for that where they made her walk around the city with a smile on her face and doing like dances and shit on city landmarks.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
She got in a sled and like goes down a hill. It's fucking crazy. And they'll do that from time to time, and they did it here with Matt Donald as well. They really fetishize sexual firsts. So, yeah, good on you, Matt Donald. You're a part of Bachelor history. You got a package cut around a kiss.
You're up with the greats with Raven's first orgasm and Pilot Pete fucking 4 times. No, they didn't give him a montage.
No, he just got a windmill.
They're going to when he's the Bachelor. Oh my God, it's going to be a nightmare.
They're going to design entire character pieces around his sexual prowess. That is for sure.
Yeah. All right, so then we have the rose ceremony. Mike goes home. Blake tells Christina, you don't need to open the door, you just need to unlock it. Mike gives an okay speech for Bachelor that he's a little kid who's stuck inside and has to watch everyone play through the window. I thought he could have done stronger there.
Blake gets the rose at the rose ceremony. That's the most important thing that happens at it, by far. Yeah. And that makes him my MVP. Wasn't the play of the game.
Because he had the play of the game. He's the MVP.
He got your play of the game, not mine. I thought he was the MVP because he took a rose from nothing. He created a position for himself next week by doing what he had to do. Saying the right words necessary. Targeting the only player that was left who had a rose to give, really. And saying what he had to get it.
They had been passing roses back and forth the whole time. It's not like that was going to change. She wasn't going to give it to Mike.
Why not? Mike's an overall better guy, more beloved by Bachelor Nation. If she's just handing them out, it doesn't really matter. Here.
Do you think Blake did the calculations that it's me or Mike?
100%. As soon as Derek went home, you could see him. They had a piece of video in the show where he was like, oh, I can't believe he just left. But behind his eyes was like, all right. One down, motherfucker. All I gotta do is beat him.
I could tell he was doing calculations, but I didn't think it was about that. I thought it was about, like, oh, I gotta look like I'm serious if I want to stay here more.
No, I think it was literally, like, I thought for sure that guy was gonna get one of the remaining roses. Now it's just between me and him. My odds are better. But yeah, he was my MVP because he did what he had to get that rose. I just think he's been a strong player throughout the entire game. They really set him up for failure in virtually every week, and he fucking is still standing. He just won't leave Paradise.
They're still setting him up for failure. They're still editing in him, like, him being like, I'm going to try to woo Christina with my sexy moves, and then they show him, like, showing her a cup of beer, saying it looks like his piss. I mean, they edited those right next to each other. I'm sure there were sexier moments they could have aired. He says that he's all in and that he won't go on a date with anyone else. He literally has the lowest bar in the universe that everyone is going to be so happy he's not going on a date after saying he's all in to Christina. He says it's a cool kind of love story, actually, which I thought was hilarious. He's trying to dig himself out of this hole and create a new narrative for himself.
It's blown, though. I do think he'll be back on Paradise, though, next year.
Absolutely. I mean, he's like one of the main characters.
If he doesn't get engaged to Christina, if they don't follow that through, we'll see.
That would be very impressive.
We'll see. Yeah, then Bree enters the game and immediately goes straight to Blake because the producers have told her to do this, to ruffle Christina's feathers unnecessarily, it turns out. They just wanted to see Christina cry for an afternoon. Yeah. That's all. So they said, go talk to Blake. And she does it. Christina cries. And then Blake has a very strong play here. He rejects the date. Again, he's kind of backed into a corner. He can't accept the date. He knows that.
Yeah.
So he does what he has to do again here. And, you know, sometimes the best players are the ones who are just making the right decisions. That's all. He's not doing it with any enthusiasm, no real style, but he's doing what he has to do. So instead, Bree takes...
That is very accurate. There's not a lot of style.
No, he's just getting through a day. And then, so Bree takes old Matt Donald on the date, and they make out in the sand, no problem. His kissing phobia or problem that they scripted, no longer necessary for their narrative, so he can dismiss it.
Does he get his voice back as well? He's like the Little Mermaid.
Yes, I think. Did he? They didn't show a voice cracking thing.
He couldn't voice crack because he hadn't kissed. So then Dylan asks Connor if they're going to go to the Boom Boom Room.
We get another invocation of the name, the Boom Boom Room.
This was a contender for me for play of the game, but I wasn't sure whether it counted in this week's episode. Deanie Babies came back.
It was my play of the game.
Yeah, that's what I was guessing. Deanie Babies comes back. Blake says, I'm so mad at him. He wants someone else to be the bad guy so badly. But no one can be mad at those baby blues, especially minus the stash.
Shaving the mustache was the beginning of the play of the game to me. Growing the mustache, I guess, was even the beginning of the beginning because he had to have known in growing it. I can play shaving it for drama if I need to. Oh, I can become a different person. I can use the mustache as the beginning of my redemption story. And he did just that. We got an entire package of him shaving that fucking mustache. It was a minute long of him getting ready, putting on his shirt.
Close up.
It was beautiful. It was so premeditated. And he used it exactly correctly to buy him a ticket back to paradise.
You think he went into paradise knowing he was going to shave the mustache?
Yes. At some point. Even if for no other reason than just entertainment. It's a moment that will definitely be in the show. They would give you some screen time. I think it was a sound strategy. But he used it here perfectly. To come back to convey seriousness. And then my true play of the game was when he issues the ultimatum. He says, not only am I here for you, I want you to leave the game with me. That statement to me was play of the game because it conveys so much that I don't care about a rose. I don't care about the prize of this game, which is all untrue, obviously, because the real prize of it is Instagram followers. But he knows that if he can take her out of there, he will avoid drama. He will leave on a high note with some form of redemption that he's now a changed man willing to find love, wants to find it with Kaylin, and maybe Bachelor Nation will boost his IG and he will be able to sell some more shit for the next year.
They absolutely will boost his IG if he's able to make Kaylin leave, which I believe is going to happen. But he also doesn't have to date her at the same time that she's dating Connor. He's basically like, you have to decide right now. It also is such a good move because it's basically forcing Kaylin in that moment to make the calculations. Like, are you going to gain more Instagram followers staying with Connor or are you going to gain more leaving with Dean? And also Dean probably has more followers than Connor.
Yeah, I just thought it was a very strong play. Anytime you can convey that your intentions are bigger than the game, that your motivation cannot be called into question. Not only are you there for the right reasons, you're willing to leave there for the right reasons.
It's kind of a Colton with Cassie kind of thing. I'm fucking leaving this entire game for you.
To me, that was the highlight of the game, certainly the play. Well,
it's my half play of the game.
That wraps us up here for another week of Bachelor in Paradise. Before we go, what's the duab at?
It has been 6,372 days without a Black Bachelor.
Numbers only getting bigger. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening. Please rate us and review us on whatever you listen to the show on. If you like the show, tell a friend. You don't have to open the door. Just unlock it. See you next week.
Praise be, Lord Harrison.